Hi, this is Catherine McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
All right, everybody get your note-taking material out. Yeah. Time to go to school. Johnny Mellencamp. Emails entitled Scumbag. Listen to this. You know what? I love stuff that's like right on the hit, that hits it right on the screws, and this does. It's about Michael Avenatti. Scumbag. Let's hope he gets the same presumption of innocence that he gave Kavanaugh. He doesn't play the game like that. Let's hope that he gets his due process, and whatever happens in the domestic violence case, you know, happens. If he didn't do it, then he's entitled to his presumption of innocence, no matter how much a lot of us feel that he should get what he tried to give Kavanaugh. But let's all keep our fingers crossed that the Justice Department charges him. As a member of a conspiracy, which had two women that he represented, I believe he represented both of them, fabricate stories relative to the Kavanaugh hearings. And then I don't know that he needs to be disbarred. I mean, I don't know what he does. I mean, if you read about him personally, he's in debt and all the rest of it. So anyway. All right, let's talk about decision making. All right, the class that I started giving in 1990 addressed a shortfall, what I believe to be a shortfall, in the training that the Marine Corps gave its young leaders, its lieutenants. And then General Allen, or at the time Major Allen, had me go to, I've taught this thing at the Naval Academy, I've taught this thing at West Point, I've taught this thing to the instructors at both SOI East and SOI West, showing them this is what we're teaching now, right? And we think that this has to be a part of everything that you do, right? With the emphasis on a leader as a decision maker, and specifically speaking about these things that the leader does. Okay? So that's kind of the background to it. A lot of it, you'll see some of the themes of recognition, prime decision in here, although not every decision that a young leader makes or any leader makes is purely from one school. You know, when you have less time, right, I would liken it to playing tic-tac-toe. How do you know where to move something? Well, you played tic-tac-toe a lot, right? You see it and you know. Okay. That's recognition, prime decision-making. Right? Analytical decision-making, when you have more time to sit down with a problem and analyze it as it should be analyzed. Right? And so you can see how this would come up when you're looking at battles like, you know, the Battle of the Little Bighorn. And my going-in proposition relative to decision-making and looking at decisions is, if you knew what that leader knew when they knew it, you would probably do the same thing. And if you don't think that, then you're probably making you're probably making a mistake. Yeah, so the going in proposition isn't, the going in at least should not be that, yeah, they're stupid, they didn't know what they were doing, if you're smart. If you're stupid, that's normally the going in proposition. And then you, all of a sudden, you discover things that you didn't know, and you discover, oh, well, maybe they were smarter than I am, and maybe they knew more than I know. Which is, I think, a pretty prudent way to approach decision making and studying it, right? And so it's timely that we do this on the heels of Custer, which is what spawned the idea yesterday, because I got to talking about his decisions. And you know, you try not to do it in hindsight, as you read and listen to what was the first part of the Custer battle study yesterday. You're trying to put yourself in his boots as he's up on the crow's nest with his binoculars, but it's a kind of a spyglass thing, I guess, is what he carried. So I don't know if had binoculars been invented. I think they had. Excuse me for yawning. So you put yourself in his boots, right? You've been told by your estimate of the situation, your intel guys tell you that there's probably no more than 800 warriors. Okay? You know from fighting them that they're more apt to leave than stand and fight. Okay, so that's what's in your head. Now, you begin to see data points that contradict that there might only be 8,000. What would the first data point be? The trail of this group is big. It's bigger than big, all right? And you're being told that. And the pushback on that is, well, Custer always thought his scouts were exaggerating, right? They didn't look at it like he looked at it. Right? They didn't have his experience. Okay? And so he's made a living like that. So in his boots at that time, good decision, bad decision, because he doesn't know any, he doesn't know there's over 10,000, right, Native Americans from various tribes in the valley of the Little Bighorn River. He doesn't know that. Okay? So you're looking for indicators now. As he forms his plan and he's evaluating things, you're looking for indicators that would tell you that something else is going on. Okay. So anyway, as that was rolling through my head yesterday, try not to be a second guesser, but put yourself in that situation. What would you have done? Okay. Made me want to teach this class. The poster child on the class is the picture of on the opening slide is a guy named Strong Vincent. Colonel, United States Army, a native, you could look him up, right? He's a native of Pennsylvania. You probably never heard of him unless you've listened to this show. The painting I have here in my studio is of Little Round Top, Strong Vincent's in the painting somewhere. If you do a search on Strong Vincent Gettysburg, right? He's from Pennsylvania. He's a lawyer, right? From Waterford, Pennsylvania. Born in 1837. So he would have been 30. Whoa, not even 30. He is 26. Yeah, he's 26 years old. As he marches into his own state, he's been fighting in Northern Virginia, and now they march north into their own state. And this happened to a number of guys. Educated at Harvard University and Trinity College, a lawyer by trade. Okay, so far he's fought at the Battle of Gaines Mill, the Battle of Fredericksburg, and will assume a prominent point in the Battle of Gettysburg, specifically on day two. So anyway, you've heard about Chamberlain on the left flank, right? You know, legendary stuff, right? But Vincent is, to me, the cover of this, because before Chamberlain could do his thing, you have to follow the movement of Vincent's brigade, which Chamberlain's a part of. So Vincent is Chamberlain's commander. They're on the backside of the wheat field. The wheat field's blowing up on day two, and really what's happening is the Confederates are trying to execute a flanking movement around Little Round Top. So he's sitting there on his horse, minding his own business, or think they're headed for the wheat field. He sees a courier riding around, and he summons the courier. Come hither, my courier. So courier rides up, and he says, who's the message for? Courier says, it's for General, I think, Davis, who's the division commander. Might be Barnes. So Vincent says, let me see it. And he says, no, sir. Let me see it. I'll take responsibility for it. So the courier hands a message to him, and the message is from the engineer officer of the Army of the Potomac telling General Barnes to send a brigade up to Little Round Top. Vincent says, I got it. Tell General Barnes my brigade is on the move up there. So Vincent, he's got his head in the game. He sees the courier, flags the courier down. I don't know that I read too many times that guys did this in the Civil War. And then he takes, you know, he makes a decision and he goes. He gets up there and he sees what's going on, right? And he has his oh shit moment. We're going to get our flank turned. Because he can see the bayonets and the sun glistening off the bayonets. And so he's telling his guys to hurry and he's setting them in. And then they hold the left flank that day. If Vincent doesn't do that, Chamberlain isn't Chamberlain. You would never hear of Joshua Lawrence Chamberlain in the way that you hear about him today. So anyway, so that is the story of Strong Vincent. Okay, had no idea that that day was going to be his day, but it was, and he stood up and he hits it on the screws. So the mandate for a leader on the battlefield is, one, to make decisions. Those decisions are born of thought. Okay? Hold on, let me back up. This is from Hans von Sieg, a German. I know. Right? Quote, the essential thing is action. Action has three stages. Decision born of thought, an order or preparation for execution, and then the execution itself. Okay? Keep that in mind. So three elements to action. Right? Action is critical. It's the thing in combat. It's the thing in operation, and you could argue it's the thing in business too. You got to make a decision. You got to issue, articulate that decision to your subordinates, and then you got to do it. And you got to be good at all three of those things. All right. There's a thing called the bias for action that, was written and published, written by a guy named Dr. Russell Solfe. Okay. And there's some just awesome stuff in it. Okay. And I'll read you a couple quotes out of it. The Germans had their shit together in terms of what they taught in their schools and how they created institutionally this quote unquote bias for action. Okay, and this is from Bias for Action, and in Bias for Action, he studies the 7th Panzer Division, which Rommel leads in France, and then Rommel leaves to go to North Africa, and then the 7th Panzer Division attacks into Russia, and they were very good, right? The unique history and circumstances of the Germans made it necessary for them to excel in war. They grasp the essence of war, chaos, violence, uncertainty, chance, and danger. They determined in a long process of more than two centuries to meet uncertainty with action. Rommel's genius was action. This genius for action was built into the structure, and this is critical, of the 7th Panzer Division through the small action-oriented staff and the similarly oriented subordinate commanders. Action. Take action. Take action. Take action. In Russia, the 7th Panzer Division advanced without Rommel even more efficiently than it had in 1940 in France. The Russian experience tells us that the genius of the division went far beyond one man, Rommel. The great advances of the 7th Panzer Division in Russia were based on self-confidence and initiative among commanders, staff, rank and file, qualities that focus on rapid action in war. Now, I think on this next page, it is my favorite quote about decision-making of all time. Okay? How about that? Yeah. Of all time. Yeah. Well, this is going to be interesting, Mac. You bet your ass it's going to be interesting. All right? The senior commanders of the 7th Panzer Division allowed subordinate leaders to make mistakes. The tolerance of these leaders was never an excuse for slipshod performance. It was the calm recognition that rapid action in the face of uncertainty will result in errors, errors that can be overcome by more action. The German command style pivoted on taking action in war, demanded that subordinate leaders take such action, and accepted that mistakes would naturally occur. With such a style, the leaders of the 7th Panzer Division understood that uncertainty was omnipresent. It was real, and the division rode with that to victories that cry out for emulation. Okay, that's Solti. Okay, so again, when you look at this, and this goes with raising kids or anything, why do you let them fail? Do you let them fail so they can learn how to overcome failure, right? And oftentimes you'll hear military leaders, you know, I don't want to make a mistake. No, you can make a mistake. Just correct it. Or this is how I actually taught it, right? Just unfuck it. You fuck it up, unfuck it. Right? We're the American military. We should be bold. We shouldn't be afraid, right? So Custer's, you know, in my opinion, he's attempting to be bold. Okay, his failure doesn't have his head in the game, right? He's read his own press clippings. He thinks he knows how this is going to turn out. And he gets indicators to use him. There's indicators that show him that it ain't like he thinks. Okay, it ain't like he thinks. All right, so you can see the bias for action. And that's what you should teach. Don't worry about being wrong. If you're wrong, right? Shoot mortars at it, smoke it, right? Shoot machine guns at it, break contact, and then throw another thunderous right hook, right? It might be with your organic weapons. It might be with aviation support. It might be with artillery. It might be with mortars. It might be with something else, all right? But boom, hit them again, adjust it, and then go get them, right? Can you do that? And Marines are always like, yes, sir, I could do that. Okay, don't be afraid. Go fuck it up. But I'm going to have your ass if you do it on a regular basis, right? Because it's not skip and go naked, right? It is be accountable, but it's be a decisive leader. In decisiveness, in the face of uncertainty, and again, one of the things that leaders have to get used to is, I don't feel like I know everything that's going on. Well, no shit. Are we going to wait here, right, and get shot at until we figure out everything that's fucking going on? The answer is, we can't do that. Okay, so what do you think is going on? Well, I think this, based on what I've seen. Okay, what's your reaction? Well, I'm going to plaster it with machine gun fire, and then we're not going to move on it. We're going to try to run. Okay, let's go. Let's do that. Let's implement that. And then you evolve that into a win. So don't be afraid, and the way we teach that on sand tables, in map exercises, is important. Because what you normally do is somebody gives a plan, and then everybody second guesses them. What if this? What if this? What if this? So like it's like the enemy is everywhere, right? And is going to crush you. Well, that's not how the enemy is. So I never allowed in my map exercises, sand tables, I never did that. You could ask questions like you were receiving the order for clarification. Okay? You could ask a question about, hey, you said this in the estimate of the situation that you expected them to be on the forward slope, but yet we're not doing this until this point. Can you explain that to me? That's clarification, okay? But what we're not going to do is play the what-if game. What if this? What if the Starship Enterprise materializes out of nowhere and beams your ass up and you see Captain Kirk? Well, I guess I'll go hang out and with him and all the hot chicks he hangs out with in the Starship Enterprise, right? I mean, but that's what you do. And what happens is, at the end of it, what the young leader says is, man, they made me look stupid. I'm not doing that again. And that's exactly the wrong thing. Exactly the wrong thing that you don't want to have happen to you. I might not get through this full class before Mike comes on. All right, so here's the leader's mandate. Okay, keep this in mind. Action. Got to make a decision, got to issue an order, got to execute, and then you got to evolve, right? In contact, you got to evolve it into winning. And Von Sieg added this to the quote, all three stages are governed by the will. Will is rooted in character. And for the man of action, character is of more critical importance than intellect. Intellect without will is worthless. Will without intellect is dangerous. So what I always take that to mean is you've got to be certain things on the battlefield. And it's not an either-or proposition. You've got to be smart. You have to have character. Right? And so that's kind of the thinking side of it. You also have to be an absolute maniac about execution. Right? Which is techniques, procedures, right? Cleaning weapons, all the nitinoid shit about being a Marine. Why do we do it like that? Why is it all so chicken shit? You want to know why? Because we've learned that that works in combat. That the people that gave that stuff to us were smart. And we ought to emulate them. Okay? So, it's not a choice. Would you rather have a smart guy or a guy who can execute? He's got to be both or else he's worthless to me. Smart guy, right place, right time, can't execute because he's not a hard ass about it, gets his ass kicked. Dumb guy, right? Wrong place, wrong time, doing everything perfect. Both guys irrelevant on the battlefield. You want to be a factor on the battlefield? Okay? Got to be smart, got to have your head to game, and then once you engage, you got to be able to kick their ass. That's all the techniques and procedures, that's the gun drills, that's the immediate action drills, that's all the rote stuff we go out there and do. Okay. Now, big discussion back then about initiative, okay? Big discussion. The Germans did not, I watched Hogan's Heroes, right, as a kid. Colonel Klink is a pretty uptight dude. The Germans did not strike me as skip and go naked people. So, how did this whole initiative thing work? Everybody's using their initiative? So I came up with a concept that I called coordinated initiative. Okay? And when you read the German troop leading manual of 1933 that I got, I went up to the National Archives and I found this thing because I saw it in a footnote in a book called Wiedemeyer Reports. Okay? General Furness would say Wiedemeyer and he would take a lot of abuse from me. But, right. I'd watch Hogan's Heroes, and I was like, yeah, Klink doesn't seem like a skip and go naked dude to me. So how does this all fit together? Like, you just did what you wanted, your company, or let's say a platoon, and you say, yeah, that way, and you do that? Doesn't sound like. So what the German troop manual said is, if you fritter away the combat power of the senior commander, you will do so at the peril of your professional career. And again, I'll take you back to Strong Vincent. Okay? When he read the message, right, he didn't give it back to the courier and then do what he wanted. Right? I'll take you to Little Bighorn. Custer tells Reno that he's going to attack up the west side of the Little Bighorn, and Custer's going to support him. He didn't tell him anything else beyond that. So Reno begins the attack. It's like, well, he said he's going to support me, but I'm not seeing shit here. Not exactly what I expected. All right? So what did Vincent do that day that made Vincent so good? Right? He gives the message back to the courier, and he coordinates his initiative. And hence the term I invented called coordinated initiative. Right? It is your duty, as soon as you conceive it, that, oh, shit, I need to go there. That's not in the order, so I'm going to deviate from the plan. Your next responsibility is to coordinate that for two reasons. One, somebody might not know that you're there, and they may whack your ass, okay, with real steel. And that's a real disaster, and we really don't want that to happen. Okay, so that's one. Two, if it's important enough for you to deviate from the plan, for the rest of us ought to be behind you, right, so that we can support you as well. Or we can shut it off and say, hey, Colonel Vincent, there's already somebody on the way and they're going to get there before you. Come here. Vincent gave them the opportunity. So in this dynamic event, the concept of coordinated initiative, these opening and closing windows on the battlefield or in a dynamic situation, if you're in business, right? Some leader, some place has to say, we're going there. And then as soon as they say that, they've got to communicate that so you can say, no, so-and-so's already almost there. I need you to go do this. Or we're about to shoot 8 million rounds of artillery on that thing. You would be best advised not to go there. All right? So the concept of coordinated initiative, right? Chaos on the battlefield, friction, right? What overcomes all of that? Initiative, right? And concert of action, right? Decisive initiative, concert of action, right? Coordinated initiative. Okay, the battlefield. Two things you got to understand about the battlefield, whether it's in business or in combat, right? Or just training. Right, two things dominate: friction and uncertainty. What is friction? Friction is all the little things that make it hard. The ground is wet, the vehicles can't get there. Okay? All our shit's wet and it's heavier. Okay? We only got two of the helicopters, we're supposed to get six. Right? He said this grid, it's actually this grid. And this stuff goes on all the time. And you're constantly forced to improvise it, right? And then uncertainty. You don't feel like you have enough information to make a decision. I'll quote Clausewitz. Yeah, how about that? You know this is legit when I'm quoting Clausewitz. Friction. In war, everything is slowed by the influence of innumerable insignificant circumstances which cannot be evaluated on paper, which lead one to fall far short of his aim. That's Carl von Clausewitz, Book 1, Chapter 7. Okay, uncertainty. Here's Helmut von Moltke, the elder. There was two von Moltkes, the elder and the younger. Uncertainty. Successive acts in war are not premeditated acts. They are spontaneous, dictated by the military intuition. We have to define intuition because it's not clairvoyant kind of shit. It is, I've done this so much. Right? I recognize it. I do it. Okay, so it's not Karnak says. It is expert says. In every case, the problem is to discover the situation in spite of the fog of uncertainty, to evaluate correctly what is known, to estimate what is unknown, to reach a decision quickly and carry it out powerfully and unhesitatingly. And I would say the importance of the powerful and unhesitatingly is because if you hit them hard, even in the wrong spot, you force them to recoil. And in the time it takes them, right, to adjust, you can adjust. Especially if you're an American and you have the assets we have, and you can unscrew yourself and you can still win. Okay. The end state for the leader is you have to be comfortable with limited information. And that he or she will not cross the line of departure with a static situation. And that that leader is prepared for the constant state of flux that combat operations present. That's important. Okay. And then one of the things you see is when things begin to change and people get pissed. Oh, you wanted nothing to change. I get it. Then you're in the wrong business. You need to go home. Okay. So that's the end state, that you're comfortable with limited information, that you assume that this thing's going to change, right? It's not. So what you got is a snapshot from a bunch of people, right? And so that's, you're comfortable with that. All right, so the next thing is the leader as a synthesizer. So a decision maker, he's an order, he or she is an order giver, and they're an executor, right? And they've got to be able to do all of this stuff in time. Time, the one non-recoverable in military operations. If you squander it, you tend to be screwed. All right. So the leader, and you could same thing applies to a business person, the business leader, right? You have a vision, you have a product, right? It's coming to market, right? So you got to make a decision about what product. Right, you got to make sure you've quantified what markets that it's headed to. You have a strategy to sell it in that market, right? You have to articulate that vision, right? Then you're going to execute it, and then it's not going to roll out, you know, perfect. There's going to be things you're going to have to adjust if you want to take this thing and then increase, you know, the angle of sales. Okay, so same thing in military operations, right? You're going to have a decision, an order, an execution, and then you're going to refine that, unscrew it, right? Because it's not going to be perfect, right? So that leader is a synthesizer, is an orchestrator of all that shit, right? That's a lot. Okay, so when we talk about decision making, there's two major ways that you make decisions, right? One is recognitional, one is analytical. Right. Next thing up on the screen is a tic-tac-toe board. Right. And you have a pattern that you would look at and say, where's X's next move? And by looking at it for at least 2 seconds, you say right there, because if I don't go there, O's about to kill me. How do you know that? I played tic-tac-toe with my sister for hours. I know. All right. So that's recognition, prime decision. You've done something. And that's the whole intuitive thing. What is intuition? It isn't Carnac says, right? It's I've studied this. I've read it. And when I got there and saw it, I knew it. I knew what was going to happen. Okay? And I'm going to take you back to Little Bighorn. Custer's experience in fighting Plains Indians taught him certain things. Okay? So you can make a case that he does everything right till he gets to that whatever tail coolie. When he hits that, and then the question is, did he not have any chance to escape? Could he not have turned towards 6 o'clock and rode over that ridge line and created distance and then linked back up with the rest of the regiment? And that the decision to bounce further to the west, to the northwest, was that the decision that gets him killed? Because in the face of all these indicators that contradict his assumptions, right, he tries to force it anyway, and he loses. Okay, so recognition, prime decision. Okay, analytical decision. Here's like this 26-step monstrosity that is known as the MAGTAF planning process, amphibious planning process, right? And whenever you put the slide up, people go, oh. And So you, after they groan, so they see the tic-tac-toe board and they're like, yeah, this is cool. Yeah, go there. Okay, recognition prime. Now you see the 26 steps and all the boxes underneath each of the 26 step, and everybody groans, oh, look at that bullshit, right, with the heading analytical decision making on it. And you're like, hey, this is what won world, defeated the Japanese in the Pacific Theater. Okay, all this. Okay, so the technique that you use to make decisions is neither good or bad. And this is my bitch about VA mental health. It's a single solution misapplied. So when you attempt to apply analytical decision making when you need quicker decisions, you'll fail. Just as assuredly, when you attempt to do recognition prime decision making, when you had the time to do analytical decision making, you will certainly goon it up. You will fail. Okay, so what defines how you should make decisions? Time. How much time do you have? Okay, I'll give you some examples. Decision-making techniques, right? Combined with an order technique, combined with execution techniques. All right? So the leader's got to synthesize this in time. All right, so decision-making techniques. On one end, you have recognitional. On the other end, you have analytical. If you have a ton of time, why not take all that time? Why not devote all that intellectual rigor? Why not get everything you can get before you go do that? Right? Conversely, when you're in an ambush, you are hooking and jabbing. That's what you're doing. Makes sense, right? What are you going to do? Sit there in your thinker pose and say, okay, looks like they're unleashing these machine guns from 20 yards away from me. Seems like they have a fair amount of ammunition. And at that point, right, the television goes off and you go away. Because what you're supposed to do is throw hand grenades and assault into them. Immediate action drill 4, near ambush. Because if you try to run away, what will they do? They'll shoot you in the back. Okay? But you are making quick decisions based on your training. Right? That's the other end of the spectrum. Right? So you navigate that. In terms of order techniques, formal order is written order, you know, Marine Corps, 5 or 6 paragraph order, depending on how you interpret OSMIAC. So, right, the whole op order signed with all the annexes, all of that, that's all good. Nothing wrong with that. That is the basis that we deviate from. Okay, on the short end is get in a column and follow me. On the short end, it's grenades, meaning throw grenades. On the short end is let's go, boom, and you move. Okay, so all are legit. Okay, but what we try to stay away from is the people that are doing the formal order take so much time that the people that are on the execution part of it get it at the last minute. They don't have a chance to do brief backs. What is a brief back? I give the order, right? And then, right, I give you 5 or 10 minutes and I say, okay, we're going to do the brief back. McNamara, you know, what are you doing? I'm doing this, I'm doing this, I'm doing this, I'm doing this, I'm doing this. All right, McNamara's good to go. Musselman, what are you doing? I'm doing this, I'm doing this, I'm doing this, I'm doing this. Got it? You know, all right. Rudy, what are you doing? I'm doing this, I'm doing this, I'm doing this. Okay, then we go from there to the train model. And we're going to walk the train model because that's how big it should be. Right? And so it's like, all right, we're here, going to cross the LD, get in formation. People get in formation. And all of a sudden, and they're pointed in the direction they're oriented. All of a sudden, McNamara is pointed east, and he's supposed to be pointed north. Hey, Mac, what are you doing? Well, based on this, and then you're like, no, then you correct that. So your orders technique that you use has to give time for the guys at the pointy end to do this shit, right? Because it saves lives, gives them time to go through in a more deliberate way. So when you have time, you can't take too much of it. Right? Because the guys at the pointy end always have a harder job than you do. Okay. And then execution techniques. Okay. When you have more time to think, to articulate that thought in an order, and you give them, your execution could be more deliberate, right? When you don't have a lot of time and you go bump with somebody, that means what are we executing? We're executing immediate action drills. And we'd rather not be doing that. We'd rather be doing deliberate attacks. And, you know, so take it to Little Bighorn, right? Rena goes down. He doesn't really know what he's going to hit. If it's in keeping with what we've hit in the past, we're going to ride towards this village. They're going to give way. We'll have to fight our way into the village. There won't be much resistance. Okay? But they're doing recognition prime decision based on a loose construct of what they believe is in front of them, and based on their experience, right? With when you hit smaller groups, here's how they behave. All right. So what happens? They stand and fight, and now what is Reno doing? He's improvising, immediate action stuff, not deliberate. Why? Lack of solid intelligence. And Custer had the time. He didn't have to attack that day. But why did he? If you know him, if you read the history about him, that's the way boldness, right, of action with him leading it worked for him. And as I said, he was lucky. Right? He was lucky. His luck ran out that day. But that was the way, if you look at his body of work, he behaved at the Little Bighorn consistent with when in doubt, right? Sound, grab his bugler, sound the charge. Let's go, boys. Boldness, decisive action always worked for him. And did not that day. Now, where he should be taking the task is when he began to see indicators that this was not a smaller group, that these guys were going to fight, that's what should have ignited the thought process in his head. This is too large for me to do. But by the time that he had that thought, he was dismounted. They were shooting horses, and they were dying on Custer Hill, all of them. And you can imagine what he was thinking. Shit. How did I fuck this one up? How did I not see this? Good God, look at him. Right? So anyway, so what we want is, we want decisions that get made, orders are given in time so that rehearsals and walkthroughs can be done, and we want to avoid immediate action execution. We'd rather exist on the deliberate side. Okay? So the long order, With no time for rehearsals, briefbacks, and walkthroughs, okay, and follow me and get in a column as you're running to the helicopter, which we've all done. We as much as we can, we want to stay away from that. And then there's a thing in execution of a couple quotes I have. Napoleon. This one's from Napoleon. Napoleon is pretty good. I did not know beforehand the mistakes the enemy would make, which I took advantage of. I simply studied my map. And when he says I studied my map, he knew the different permutations that were possible by having expert knowledge of his map and the capability of his own units. And therefore, when opportunities presented themselves, Napoleon said, do this, right? That's the quote-unquote intuitive. Intuitive equals expert knowledge. It's not Karnak. Next quote. His successes were not due to the gifts of a magician, but to those of a great general who was continuously working out possibilities on a map, and who in this way knew more about the enemy's capabilities and limitations than did the enemy himself. And that's from Frederick von Freytag Lehrenhoven. Interesting book he writes. I think he wrote a book called Panzer General. He's a Catholic German. Was not down with the whole Nazi thing. He describes Hitler in very interesting terms when Hitler gives him, awards him his Iron Cross. He's a cavalry guy, by the way, and he attacks down the same road in World War II as he did in World War I. Interesting book. And so the way I talk about it is, let's just suppose you wind up attacking into a very, very prepared defense, what's called a deliberate defense. You see certain things that took you, or you were told certain things that took you there. All of a sudden, those things aren't true. The things you assumed aren't true, and you see machine gun fire crossing in front of you. That is indicative of prepared machine gun positions that are mutually supporting. You see mortars dropping into draws and what we call dead space. That is a sign that those mortars have registered there. That's your oh shit moment. Oh shit, we just walked into a prepared defense. So you make that read, and what do? You plaster the shit out of them with artillery and smoke to make them get their head down. You recock it, right? And then you get after them a different way. Okay, now this might require, hey, I got to blow a hole in them, and I'm going to go through that hole. That's what I'm going to do. Okay, so it's those reads, those adjustments, having your head in the game. Part four, doing it. One, the estimate, focus on the enemy, and you're going to have to fill in gaps. Okay, well, we know this, we don't know this. Okay, based on this, right, I'm going to make some educated assumptions. Okay, Custer, educated assumption based on fighting, they're not going to stay, they're going to flee. Custer, educated assumption based on his experience in the plains, right, and what the intel people have told him, probably not more than 800 people, 800 warriors, I can handle that easily. And then you have to be able to quantify the risk, okay? So if Custer, let's just say he sits down with his brothers and his staff and he says, hey, look, that trail that the scouts that took me to see, the width of that trail, I have never seen. That tells me that what's down there is bigger than I thought. Now, I don't know that it's nothing that we can't handle, boys, and we're going to handle it, because I am George Armstrong Custer. However, right, if there are multiples of 800 in terms of warriors, okay, that means we could lose the entire force, and I'm not prepared to do that. So as a result, right, here's how we're going to do this. Okay, so you quantify the risk and you tweak the plan, and you should have that in your head. If I do this, do I lose everybody? If I do this, do I lose everybody? And if I do this, what happens? Okay, pretty important stuff. Okay, then in the Marine Corps, in the United States military now, we have a thing called commander's intent and mission orders. So when Secretary Mattis says, don't use the word secure, you want to know why? Because secure has a very specific tactical meaning. It's a tactical mission. Secure this. Okay? So these things allow you to function. So the commander says, go north and do good things. Okay? And the end state is, I want you to secure the valley of the Little Bighorn. Got it. Okay, those things allow me to function with a changed situation, an irrelevant mission because the situation is now vastly different, and no communication. Okay, so Custer rolls up, Reno goes bump and stops, and he yells, oh shit. He fires the Brown Star cluster, which means he's shitting his pants, right? And Reno, because Custer said he was supporting him and he's observing him, Reno's giving up the field. Oh shit, they're attacking. Now, Custer has decisions he can make. Right? Because he can't really communicate with his higher headquarters. And what should that decision be? All right, I'm going to maintain contact with these guys. I'm going to develop their disposition so I can give a report, because I know where Gibbon General is. I know where General Terry is up on the boat. Right? And so I'm now developing this, and I'll wait till in 24 hours. I can do this for 24 hours. I can skirmish with them. I'll develop their disposition. I'll have a great intelligence report. And tomorrow, when Gibbons is up and the guy coming from Fort Fetterman from the south, when they're all here, we'll crush these guys. That's what it allows you to do. Obviously, Custer didn't do that. Okay, the order. You use tactical missions. McNamara, secure. Right? Then you make McNamara back brief it. At the end of it, right, I tell my subordinates, tell me what you know. I kind of went through that. You rehearse it. And the best people I saw rehearse it were the Op 4 guys at Fort Irwin when I worked with them. They built big terrain models. You stood on it. You oriented the way you were thought you were going to orient it. And so many problems got solved simply by walking through it. And then you may have a couple of branch plans. If they do this, we're going to do this. And if they do this, we're going to do this. This one's called Arapaho. This one's called Mississippi. Okay? Notice they don't sound alike. All right, and then when we execute, just like in sports, right, there's certain reads that you're going to make, right? If you're playing football, if you're a defensive player, if the linemen fire out, it's a run play, you have certain responsibilities, and you make certain adjustments, okay? And that's all in execution, with the idea that we're going to evolve the plan, we're going to read, we're going to adjust, and we're going to evolve the plan into a win. The one that we start with is only to get us going. What we end with, God only knows. Okay? President's, is he at the Marine Barracks in Washington, D.C.? He's at the Marine Barracks someplace. He and the First Lady. Holy smokes. Okay? And this goes to Custer. As you make those reads, okay, there's an art, whether you force the plan or you're being steadfast in the execution of it. And there comes a point at which, right, the oh shit moment, and you're either able to do it or you're not. Okay, so the way I would reinforce this was after we would do problems, okay, and you can do this when you're doing your own critiques of things. You have the person who is the leader stand up and say, this was my estimate of the situation. You make sure you then make him talk about the enemy. What did you think the enemy was doing? Okay, what were the things that you didn't know and what were the assumptions that you made? Well, I didn't know if he was in this building and this building and this building, so I assumed that they were. Okay, what's his center of gravity, and then what's the vulnerability, because this is maneuver warfare stuff, that you're going to exploit? And so what is the matchup you're going to try to create? And in maneuver warfare, we try to create dilemmas. And so in training, you have to make them talk about it. What is the dilemma that you're going to, otherwise you're just going to get online and go fight them? No, I want to threaten this bridge. If I threaten this bridge, right, and I begin to move towards it, he's got to give up this position or be wiped out. Okay, I got it. Okay, and then how are you going to engineer that? Who's doing what? And then after that, right, I'd make them recite the mission and execution paragraph. Everybody knows. And then the way we evaluated it was, is his thought process logical? Is it faithful to the principles that we're raised on? Is he showing good tactical judgment, right? Is he being timely, using time well, and being aggressive? And does he maintain the initiative by further actions, further decisions? So that's how we evaluate it. And then the last thing I would tell them would be, if you do these things consistently with your subordinates over time, they will master, right, the techniques and procedures that we talk about, right? They will become masters of decision making. They will become masters of coordinated initiative. And all leaders, once they see the guys that are good at it, begin to kind of separate, everybody else falls in line. And my message for people was, if you do it this way, if you build it, they will come and they will give you what they want. And so that's the decision-making class. Boom. All right, let me take a break. Email your questions if you have any. More of All Marine Radio. The gunner is supposed to join us. We'll take a quick break. Him next. Don't touch that dial.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
Hi, this is Tim McGarry from the McGarry Mortgage Minute. Heard every Wednesday right here on All Marine Radio, where I'll answer all your mortgage questions from home buying to home financing, from VA to conventional loans to moving in. So don't miss it, the McGarry Mortgage Minute, right here on All Marine Radio, on the All Warrior Radio Network. And remember, my name is McGarry, and I'm here to help.
Find all of Tim McGarry's contact information on the ReadBoard page at allmarineradio.com.
To be fully fit, you have to be physically fit. You also have to be mentally fit.
I wish that more warriors would realize how important it is if you get the psychological support that you need so that you can focus on the rest of your life.
I think it takes strength in order to admit that you have an issue. But it also takes intuitiveness of a friend, a leader, a supervisor to pick up on the signal that the soldier is having issues and needs to seek professional help in dealing with it.
It's also important for the lowest possible levels of leadership to be very supportive in helping their members get the help that they need.
When I went to get help, I had more help than I could ask for from my entire command.
It's sometimes challenging to come to a senior staff member or senior officer in the unit with a problem. There's not a commanding officer out there or a leadership staff out there that doesn't want to help. So don't hesitate. Come ask.
Learn more by visiting www.realwarriors.net or calling 1-866-966-1020.